It's time!
You guys silly? I'm still gonna send it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I'm POU's Half Athlete. I don't play sports anymore, but I write about them. I cover them. I talk about them on the radio. I do all I can with sports. Mentally, I'm an athlete. I understand what's going on an athletic field or surface. But physically, you know, I am just a guy, and that is why I am a half athlete. Joining me in studio, he's our new co-host. Probably the last time I'll call you new, Seth, because this could be one of our last shows of the fall semester. Seth Bershing. Seth, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Christian. Happy to be here for another show. I had a little trouble getting here this morning just because it was cold enough that I had to scrape my car and defrost it and all that. Swerved off the road just a little bit because of the icy roads, but
living reckless.
I'm here. I'm alive. Didn't crash, so I'm good. How are you doing, Christian?
Dude, I'm mad I had to scrape as well. I was not pleased with that. It is that time of year, I guess, and it did not make me happy. I'm doing just fine. Usually DJ Winter is in here with us as well, but this week DJ got a little busy, and I guess that's he's at home right now probably working on some homework. We could only assume, right?
I mean, sleeping maybe.
Calling him out. No, it's dead week here at POU. Next week is final, so if it's that time of year for DJ, that's what it is. So we'll give him a pass this week, but maybe not in the future. I want to remind you that those of you who are listening right now that everything you could hear on Half Athlete Radio could be heard again on mastmedia.pou.edu. That's where all of our shows are archived. Every single one over the last 3 years, you can check them out there. You can also check us out on YouTube. Type in Half Athlete Radio in the search bar and hit us up over there. We'd really appreciate it if you would subscribe to the page. We got some video content as well as some other content from high school football broadcasts over the year. We're going to be switching gears and getting into high school basketball, so be sure to check that out as well. And finally, please, throughout the show, if you want to join in on the conversation, we want you to do it. You can call us at 253-535-7332. Again, our number is 253-535-7332. Seth, I want to open up the show talking about the Seattle Seahawks and the Philadelphia Eagles. They played on Sunday Night Football, a primetime game, and the Seahawks did work against the best team in the NFL right now.
They did do work, yes.
Final score of that game, Seattle Seahawks 24, Philadelphia Eagles 10. Seth, what are some of your immediate takeaways from that game?
Well, they did well the things that I've been complaining about on this show every single week, and that was cleaning up the penalties. They only had 5 on Sunday night, and they came out and started out strong, putting up 10 points in the first quarter and keeping the Eagles scoreless.
Yeah, I would agree. They look like a completely different group because, like you said, the penalties were down for the entire game, and the start was quick. They got everything they wanted in the first quarter. With the field goal and the touchdown, just you couldn't have drawn it up any better if you're a Seattle Seahawks fan.
Yeah. I mean, Wentz looked okay from the Philadelphia side. I thought that after this game, looking back, the Eagles are maybe a little overrated. They've only beaten one above 500 team out of their 10 wins, so I think that's a little bit of an indicator at possibly being overrated, but definitely some things to be excited about from the Seattle side, knowing that you knocked off who was the number one seed in the NFC.
Interesting you go that way with the Eagles being overrated. Just looking at the numbers, Carson Wentz threw for 327 yards, but could only muster 10 points throughout the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of wild. The Seahawks did get a break towards the beginning of the second half when there was a fumble down near the goal line that the Seahawks were able to recover for a touchback. I mean, that was really, though, the only big break that the Seahawks got throughout that game. I mean, they pretty much just beat them.
It didn't really feel like the Eagles just shot themselves in the foot all that much. There just wasn't that many opportunities for the Eagles to do a whole lot.
We talked about it last week that, you know, the Seahawks were without Richard Sherman. They were without Cam Chancellor. And coming into Sunday night's game, the Eagles were one of the best, if not the best, offense in the league.
They were number one in points scored per game.
I'd call that the number one offense then. Seahawks come in here without those two players, without Cliff Averill and others, but specifically those two players, and hold the Eagles to 10 points. Are we now getting to a point where we can go, okay, who's the next guy after Richard Sherman? Who's the next guy after Cam Chancellor? Because, man, I'll take that without those two guys.
Yeah.
I'll take it in a heartbeat every single time.
Yeah, it did look good. I don't know if it's the system that just makes it a little easier for corners and other safeties to play. I think having Earl Thomas back there is a great safety valve for the corners to know that if they do get beat, they have help behind them still. So I don't know if it's a system thing or if you want to go with the route that I think you took a week or two ago, saying that Sherman and Chancellor may be overrated. I think another way of looking at this is just that the guys that the Seahawks have waiting in the wings to take over are better than we anticipated.
So Bradley McDougal is a replacement for those two guys. He leaves the game with 12 total tackles. Byron Maxwell has 7 and Shaquille Griffin has 5. I mean, that's getting the job done. And I think that, you know, the argument made last week was there were people that were throwing away from Richard Sherman for entire games, like really good quarterbacks. You mentioned the Aaron Rodgers game a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Where he wouldn't even go that way. Well, you know, unfortunately for Richard Sherman, that was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of the shots on Sunday night of Richard Sherman hanging out watching on the sidelines, he might have been realizing that he was watching his job go away because Bradley McDougal, Byron Maxwell, and Shaquille Griffin got it done.
Yeah, well, corners especially do tend to drop off once they hit that 30-year-old mark. I think Sherman is 28 right now, I want to say, 29 maybe. So he is getting up there in age as far as corners go. So it would not surprise me to see his speed especially start to drop off. I know he's a good enough player that I think he can survive a couple more years even after his speed starts to go. But yeah, that will definitely affect his play to an extent.
So it's an interesting kind of spot where the Seahawks are in, kind of transforming. We've seen them do it offensively where they're not a team that's going to pound the ball and run hard down the middle of the field. And now defensively, kind of a changing of the guard as some of the older guys who the city has been in love with the last 4, 5, 6 years are now, you know, over the hump, and now it's time to see who's next and what's on the horizon for the Seahawks. And when, like we said, they keep the number one scoring offense in the league to 10 points, you got to be excited.
Yeah,
forward.
I think we can definitely say that guys like Sherman and Chancellor are in their last big contract years. Once these contracts are up, they may be back with Seattle, but it won't be on a mega deal like they currently are.
It wouldn't make sense for either side. Any other takeaways you have from Sunday night's game? I mean,
just that the Seahawks looked the part of a playoff team Sunday night. They looked complete offense, defense, special teams. There wasn't a whole lot there, but they didn't need it to be. They look like they can hang with really the best of the NFC. I'm not sure that they could beat the Vikings in Minnesota, but nobody else in the NFC scares me all that much in a potential matchup.
Probably the cleanest game as a whole the Seahawks have played this season. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, like you said, you look forward into the playoff picture. I believe with the win, the Seahawks jumped into the 5 seed,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken. And like you said, that puts them in a matchup with who would be in there, the Saints and the Panthers or the Rams. I mean, those are all teams that are in,
yep,
the mix, correct? So you say no one in that group besides Minnesota, maybe at Minnesota, scares you?
I mean, ideally, you'd want your first game to be in Seattle as opposed to traveling to another team stadium to play. But, I mean, we already beat the Rams in L.A. this year.
Wow. We talked about that game. I don't know who beat who in that one, but yeah, you did. Seahawks
well,
did
according,
pick up a W.
According to the scoreboard, the Seahawks won that game, Christian.
By the skin of their teeth. It'll be interesting. I'm excited for when the Rams come to town and play Seattle in Seattle, because that should be a very telling game.
And when I say I'm not scared of a team, I don't necessarily mean that I think it's an easy win. I think the Panthers, Rams, Saints, those are all good teams. They could very easily end up beating Seattle if it came to that. When I say I'm a little scared of Minnesota, they look like a complete team. They don't even have all that great of a quarterback right now.
Case Keenum's playing pretty well. I don't know if you could say they don't have that great of a quarterback. Dude's getting the job done.
Perhaps, yeah. I suppose that's fair to say. Case Keenum has been playing out of his mind lately. But the Vikings in Minnesota are just... That's a really tough draw if the Seahawks were to have to go there and try and win.
It'll be interesting down the stretch as we get towards playoff time. I believe, if anything, this win kind of secures that the Seahawks... It doesn't secure that they'll make it, but it secures that, you know, they have a much better chance. If they lose this game, then it's looking pretty slim, and they're going to need some extra help from outside forces. Now they kind of control their own way and can win out and make it for sure.
And they still control their own destiny in the NFC West, too, because they get to play the Rams one more time.
It will be very interesting what takes place down the stretch in the NFL season. We'll talk more Seahawks later on in the show, but right now we are going to hit a break. When we come back, the Huskies figured out where they're going bowling, if that's a term. I think it is. So stick around, come back. We will talk a little bit of Huskies after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio.
I heard about a shooting involving a 3-year-old girl over the summer. My daughter Riley is that age.
There was a point when I felt that I was going to die.
My parents used to always say a bullet doesn't have a name on it.
Someone put a bullet in the back of my 14-year-old son's head.
The gun should never be an option.
We're Americans. We don't have to live like this.
We can all make a difference.
In the United States, 88 people die of gun violence every day.
We can end gun violence.
Welcome back to Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Seth Bershing. I'm a half athlete here at PLU. I'm joined in studio today by only one of our two other hosts. His name is Christian Bond. He doesn't play sports anymore, but he writes about them, likes to talk about them on the radio. DJ is not with us today. He's out in dead week trying to get all his homework done.
He's out in dead week trying to survive.
Yep. I do feel that pain. Trying to survive. If you like what you're listening to, want to hear it again, go to massmedia.plu.edu. Again, that's massmedia.plu.edu. Or you can go to our YouTube page, which is Half Athlete Radio, and check us out there. Subscribe and watch all of the clips there if you prefer to do it that way. If you want to call the show, go ahead. The number is 253-535-7332. Again, that's 253-535-7332.
Let's jump into it. Let's talk about the University of Washington Huskies. They finished the season ranked 11th in the country. Not bad for the Dogs. They will go ahead and head to the Fiesta Bowl, where they will face the number 9 ranked team, Penn State. Against Penn State, the Huskies will face the nation's most touted running back in Saquon Barkley, who rushed for 1,134 yards and 16 touchdowns. The matchup is kind of perfect because defensively, the Huskies enter the game with the number one rushing defense, allowing just 92.3 yards per game and 2.63 rush yards per play. Should be an interesting matchup. I kind of like that. It's different. It's going to be kind of eye-opening for both coasts, really. I mean, yeah. You've heard a lot of hype about Penn State and Saquon Barkley, but now for those of us here on the West Coast, and specifically Washington State, we're going to get a chance to see what the hype is really all about. And for people on the East Coast, they're going to get, you know, a chance to see maybe what Chris Peterson was crying about, his team not getting enough recognition and things like that. Seth, what are your thoughts about the Fiesta Bowl?
I think it might be a little bit of a grudge match going back to last year. The Huskies were the number 4 team in the college football playoff a year ago, and I believe Penn State was number 5, so they were just out of the rankings. So
I didn't even link those two things together, yeah.
I think it'll absolutely be a grudge match, especially for Penn State. So it should be exciting to see, as you mentioned, the great running game of Penn State and the country-leading Huskies run defense. The Huskies did have a little trouble stopping the run against elite running backs like, what was his name, Love?
Bryce
from
Love
Stanford.
From Stanford, yeah.
So I'm a little concerned going up against who's going to be an early first-round pick in Barkley. We'll see how it plays out, I suppose, on the 30th that they play?
I don't know if it's a New Year's Day game or not. I'm not 100% sure on that. But you think these numbers are a little misleading with the Huskies having the number one rush defense in the country? You know, we've talked about it all year long, how they weren't necessarily tested. Or they shouldn't have been tested until that Stanford game. We know they lost that Arizona State game early in the year, but their first true test came against Stanford, and they dropped that game. You already mentioned Bryce Love. Do you think these numbers are misleading to an extent for the Huskies defense?
Yeah, to an extent, probably, because they didn't really play any difficult teams until Stanford. They didn't even have to play USC this year. Their first three games of the year were against like Rutgers, Idaho, Montana State. It was very, very subpar teams. So their stats, to an extent, are going to be inflated. They looked very, very beatable in the Stanford game. Of course, they ended up losing that game, and their run defense got worse as the game went along.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough because we kind of have seen the entire Huskies season. We don't know, you know, what it was like for Penn State if they, you know, if they had tough, they might have had tough opponents in name. Both teams are going to enter the game with a 10-2 record, but it's just, it's very interesting to me. I'm going to look up some seasons. Miles Gaskin. We talked about the running game for Penn State. Gaskin, I believe, has more yards this year. I'm going to try and get the exact number. Gaskin has more yards.
Than Barkley?
Than Barkley. Yeah, let me look it up.
Mm. I know Barkley is in the latest NFL projections. I believe he was in the top five for overall prospects, so that should definitely be a interesting matchup to watch as that develops through the game, to see if they're really able to contain him or if he's just going to break off a couple big plays and really change the shape of the game that way.
Yeah, Gaskin on 208 attempts has 1,322 rushing yards for a net gain actually of 1,282 and 19 touchdowns, so a little bit more production than Barkley, but like we said earlier, you know, don't put as much stock in it maybe necessarily as other stats, I guess, because of the inflated schedule that the Huskies did play this year. Do you think they have an advantage in the passing game? I mean, we usually have a guy in here telling us that a 10-2 quarterback isn't good enough and won't get the job done and this, that, and the other, but do you think they have an advantage in the passing game, or do you think it's pretty even there?
I'm not all that familiar with Penn State's quarterback. Looking at his stats, he looked to be on par with Jake Browning, so I don't think there's necessarily a huge advantage one way or the other. I know their offense as a whole averages 453 yards per game, which that's pretty good, but and they also don't turn the ball over very often. They had less than one turnover per game.
That was Penn State?
Yes. So I don't think that the Huskies are going to win this game by Penn State mistakes. They're going to have to go out. They're going to have to put up some points, I think, because I do believe that Penn State's offense will at some point poke through the defense for a couple scores.
See, and maybe now looking through the receiving stats for the year for the University of Washington Huskies, this could be a reason why, you know what, for me it is a reason why that they're not, they didn't finish higher in the rankings in the regular season. Dante Pettis, everyone knew about him though coming into this year. He had 721 yards on the season. The next closest receiver only played 8 games. It was Hunter Bryant. He only had 331 yards receiving this season.
So he had more than twice as much as the next guy.
There's just one guy to pass to in this game, and that's what it's more about. It's more about the weapons around Jake Browning than it is Jake Browning. Jake Browning didn't get worse from one year to the next.
Yeah.
And it's really why the Huskies didn't have, you know, an explosive offense like they had maybe a year ago. It was just something was missing in the passing game, and that's really why we're sitting here talking about a Fiesta Bowl instead of maybe a college playoff berth. I'm not going to say that they were that quality of team this year, but they were close if they win that Arizona State game.
Yeah. I don't know that they would get in at 11-1, but you're right. I mean, especially with John Ross, who was, the number 9 overall pick in this last year's NFL mm-hmm. draft. He set the record for the 40-yard dash time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you take away a deep threat guy and really an all-around receiver like that, that's going to change how your offense functions. You're not going to be able to stretch the field the same way that you were.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year for the Washington Huskies. It's been fun to watch, a little frustrating at times, especially like we said with that Arizona State loss early in the year. Kind of ruined their college football playoff hopes. And we'll see what they do in the Fiesta Bowl. I'm excited. Like you said, Seth and I both aren't very familiar with Penn State, but we're going to get a chance to see them and kind of learn more about this team as that game happens. I think I'm excited for it. Like you said, it's not as climactic as last year playing Alabama in the college football playoffs. Like, that was sweet. But, you know, this year, a little different, and that's okay.
One quick note. I wanted to get your opinion on the four teams in the college football playoff. Do you have strong preference? Do you like the teams that got in? Who do you think's going to win it?
Remind me who got in. Clemson got in.
Clemson's playing Alabama, and Oklahoma's playing Georgia.
I believe that... Yeah, see, I don't know, because Auburn beat Alabama, right? And then Auburn played for a championship and lost.
Yeah.
And got bumped out, right?
Yeah.
So, in essence, it was almost better to not play for your conference championship.
Yeah.
And avoid losing. You didn't win, but you also didn't lose, and then you got in if you're Alabama.
I think what would have happened is, I think Auburn had three losses with losing in the conference championship. Had that been their only second loss instead of their third loss, I think they get in at 10-2 instead of 9-3. But with three losses, I can understand why they didn't get in ahead of a one-loss Alabama team.
Ultimately, what the college football playoff committee kind of showed, if you live up to what people think you'll be in the offseason, you're probably going to get in, if that makes sense. Because all year long, we've heard the commercials on TV talking about, oh, we're trying to get the four best teams in this playoff. Well, the last time we saw Alabama, they only put up 14 points against a team that lost in the SEC championship game.
Yeah.
So it was a bad day, and now they're going to play for a national title? Like, is that what that is? Because, you know, Alabama's been one of the top dogs all year long. That started all the way back in August.
Yeah.
So what matters?
I mean, and that's why I brought up last week that I would like to see them expand it to six spots in the college football playoff, have the five conference championship winners, and then the next best team, just because it clears up all this really lack of understanding between the coaches, the teams, the players, and the fans who don't really know what they need to do to get in. It's not clear.
If this needed to be done the right way, the national championship playoffs would start week one, and it would be a flex schedule all the way through.
That'd be interesting to try and schedule.
Okay, whatever. Keep it in the division, keep it in your regions, but like, to make it fair, that's what it is.
Yeah,
because of football is, and because it, like,
it's,
you have to start it week one with like Washington playing Montana, or, you know, someone even worse, and from then on just going forward. And now Montana's eliminated, they can play the rest of their year. But like, I don't even know how to schedule it, but that's the only way to make it fair and balanced and a true playoff system.
I mean, I think that's unnecessary, because a lot of those teams, you know, aren't gonna be in.
Okay, well,
and
the teams we knew were gonna be in the top four ended up being, like, with the committee doing what they did, like I said, what matters?
Yeah, that's really the dilemma. Nobody knows what really matters. It's just kind of a year-to-year thing that the committee can take.
So put all 126 or 100, whatever the number is, put them all in there and just play a different game every week. Washington never knew what time their game started until Sunday, the Sunday before. What if they didn't know who they were playing until the Sunday before? What if everyone didn't know who they were playing until the Sunday before? They had a week to prep for them, and then, bang, we play it on Saturday.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting idea. I don't think it's very practical, simply
why not?
Because of the scheduling aspect, the
choosing
booking
four
of
teams
flights.
Isn't practical.
But that's I don't think you need to take all 128 or however many there are. You could probably do, if you really wanted to go that route, you could do 64 or 32 or 16.
64 from week four on?
Sure. Because by that point...
Why not? No, I'm with you. Why not?
By that point, you're going to have some of the mediocre teams already weeded out. Like, you're not going to have the Montana, the Idaho, the
no, I'll give them a chance.
South Dakota States.
Then that's not fair. Whoever. We're going to hear from that fan base. It's a mess. This college football playoff stuff's a mess. I mean, whatever, dude. You got four teams in there. We'll watch four teams play. Is what it is, man.
Yeah.
It's only, how old is it? It's only 3 years old, right?
I want to say this is the fourth year.
It's 3 or 4 years old. They'll figure it out as time goes on. But time is going on us, and we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take a look forward and see what's going to happen between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Seattle Seahawks. Should be a very interesting matchup. We'll talk about it next. Don't go anywhere. It's Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio.
My hair is kind of different.
Not everyone likes the way I dress. And I don't look like other people.
Me neither. Everyone is different, but no one deserves to be bullied. So be kind, stay positive, and support each other.
Every single day.
Welcome back to Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I'm PLU's half athlete. I don't play sports anymore, but I write about them. I talk about them on the radio. Mentally, I'm an athlete. I understand what's happening on an athletic surface. But physically, I'm just a guy. Joining me in studio, he's our new co-host for maybe this is the last show. He might be new in the spring. Mm-hmm. In J-term, he might not be new anymore. His name is Seth Bershing. If you want to go back and listen to every show we've ever done here, you can do it at mastmedia.plu.edu. That's every show in its entirety. Once again, it's mastmedia.plu.edu. If you want to check out just clips of the show, clips of maybe other outside activities that the three of us work on, you could do it at Half Athlete Radio. Go into YouTube, type in Half Athlete Radio. That's where you'll find all the content from our show. It's all there. We're the first name that pops up, so go ahead and help us out. Give us a subscribe, and we'd really appreciate that. If you want to call in the show, please give us a call at 253-535-7332. Once again, our phone number is 253-535-7332. Right now, we want to take a moment to look ahead to the Seahawks game this weekend. Seahawks play the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville. Both teams enter the game with an 8-4 record. It's the Jaguars' defense that the Seahawks are going to have to be aware of. The Jaguars only allowing 307 yards per game, whereas the Seahawks are allowing 300 and about 40 yards per game. Offensively, these teams are scoring about the same number of points, both in the 24 range. But defensively, again, Jacksonville is allowing just 14 points per game, whereas the Seahawks are giving up 18 points per game. Both pretty solid numbers.
Yeah.
Seth, what do you think going into Sunday's game in Jacksonville?
I expect it to be a pretty low-scoring game with the two defenses that are going to be out there. Of course, Blake Bortles doesn't exactly intimidate you as a quarterback. I don't think he's going to be able to do all that much against the Seattle defense. But with that great Jacksonville defense, I think it will be tough going for Seattle. This could be a game that's decided by a missed field goal or two. So Blair Walsh better be on his A game.
It is Wednesday before the game, and Seth is going right at Blair Walsh before we get even deep into this thing. So it's going to be down to Blair Walsh, huh?
It could be, yes.
Just because both these defenses are so strong, are very strong. I'm not going to say so strong, but they're both very strong defenses.
I don't know that either team is going to be finding the end zone very often on Sunday.
So, I mean, that's a very... very pointed to go right at Blair Walsh right away. I would agree with you. I would agree that it should be a low-scoring affair. I think that the Seahawks are going to need to create a turnover at some point like they did in the Eagles game. I mean, you think about the game on Sunday night. Eagles are getting ready to score, and I can't remember exactly what the score was. It might have been like 17-3 maybe at the time.
I think it was 17-10 at the time.
17-10, so that would have tied it. So you can think of how different the dynamics would have been. Had Philadelphia gone in and scored right there. But like, I think that a turnover is going to be necessary. A turnover or two are going to be necessary. And like you said, with Blake Bortles, the Jaguars only averaging 215 yards through the air. Not a very big number, but on the ground, they're averaging 149 yards per game.
Yeah, they do have Leonard Fournette at running back. He's a rookie, but a very talented running back. He's looked good all season long, really, and he's been their workhorse.
Talk about matchups. A lot of the times when people talk about a matchup, it's like quarterback versus quarterback, which is absurd because they never play each other at the same time.
Right.
They're both watching each other like, ooh, Russell Wilson versus Carson Wentz. Well, it's not even that a little bit. I don't know why people say that. This weekend, the matchup might be Leonard Fournette, the running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars, versus Bobby Wagner. Who are you going to pick in that matchup? Who's the better player? Who would you lean with?
I'd go with Bobby Wagner. I mean, he hasn't missed a tackle the entire season, they said, on the Sunday night game.
Wow.
Which that's impressive. That means when he has a running back or whoever has the ball in his sights, he makes the tackle every single time, never misses. I mean, how can you go with Leonard Fournette in that matchup?
Again, Jaguars averaging 149 rushing yards per game, but the Seahawks are only allowing 98 rushing yards per game. So this is a defense, like, this is a matchup that what one team does well, the other team is able to stop.
Yeah.
And so, man, I don't know. I don't know. It's a toss-up. Like we said, both teams are 8-4. The Seahawks are 4-2 on the road. The Jacksonville Jaguars are 4-2 at home. I mean, it doesn't get much closer than this. I mean, what?
I was a little concerned with the game originally being slated for 10 a.m. Mm-hmm.
10 a.m. East.
Yeah.
10 a.m. Local.
Yeah, 10 a.m. local time. But they flexed that game to 1:25 local time. And the Seahawks usually come out pretty flat in 10 a.m. games, but they haven't had to play a single one of those games this year, and this was the only one that they were going to have to play, and now it's 3 hours later. So I don't know how much of a difference that will make, but I think that's definitely a positive for Seattle.
Earlier you mentioned how important you think the field goals are going to be in this matchup. We talked about the Eagle game and how it was almost uncharacteristic for this team to come out and start so quickly and score 10 points in that first quarter and really get up on their opponent. What will be more detrimental if there is a missed field goal or if there is a slow start? What would be worse for this team? It obviously depends on where. Like, if there's a missed field goal in the third, in the fourth quarter, that could be it. But also, if you get down against this defense 10 points in the first quarter, that's a ton.
I would say that the slow start would be more detrimental, but the Seahawks do that pretty much on a weekly basis with the exception of this last game, and they've still won 8 of their games this year. So I think I would have to lean towards missing a field goal, because that will set up Jacksonville with good field position, and of course that's taking points that the Seahawks should have had off the board then.
According to the ESPN Football Power Index, Jacksonville is a 56%, like has a 56% chance of winning this football game. This is a crazy tight matchup.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where to go with it. It should be very fun to watch on Sunday.
They only play the Jaguars every 4 years, being right in opposite conferences. And I believe the last time they played, the Seahawks won, I think it was 42-7. But again, that was 4 years ago. Completely different teams on both sides.
Very different, very different. God, I don't know. If you had to pick a standout star going into Sunday's game, like, this is the guy who's going to have a monster game, who's it going to be?
I think Tyler Lockett might have a really, really good game.
Surprise, surprise. He hasn't done much. I mean, he's been a contributing member, but I don't remember him being a standout so far this year. Why are you going to go with Tyler Lockett?
I don't know. I just feel like he's going to break off a couple big plays. He's a deep threat. He handles the kick and punt returns for Seattle. I think he breaks off one or two big plays in a defensive game. I think that's going to be huge, not only for momentum, but also just getting in a position where you either get a touchdown on a big play or you get close enough to the end zone that you're at least going to put some points up on the board, and that'll be a huge difference in the final score.
So essentially, Tyler Lockett is due to do something big, is ultimately kind of what it comes down
yes.
to for you. I'm going to go with, and this is such an obvious, like, duh answer, but it's going to be Russell Wilson. It's going to have to
That's such win a boring answer.
I know, it's so vanilla, and I'm sorry for those of you who are listening at home, but that is what it is. Broadcasters couldn't stop talking about how Russell Wilson is the reason for, like, 82% of the Seahawks offense.
Yep.
Every game. Not just last week, not just the week, every single game. I mean, and so how is my answer going to be any rusher. Different? How is it going to be any different? Like, it has to be Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I didn't say Wilson simply because I
it's
think that's
easy.
Kind of a given.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm going to say it because it's a given. Like, Russell Wilson's going to go as this team goes, and should be a fun matchup on Sunday. You got anything else to add about this game against Jacksonville?
I don't know. It's just kind of it's another game. It's a good team. And I mean, of course, I'm going to watch it as much of it as I'm able to, but I don't know. It doesn't feel as important as it did a week or two ago when the Seahawks were 7-4 or 6-4. It just feels like they have more breathing room now. If they lose, it doesn't mean quite as much.
So we're in the final stretch, the last four games of the season. They got Jacksonville, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Arizona. Can they afford to drop one now with this win over Philadelphia coming down the stretch?
I think they can. I mean, ideally, you don't want to because
right.
then you don't really control your own destiny anymore. They've got Rams at Cowboys and then Cardinals to wrap up the season. I think to get in, they need to finish 10-6 or better. So really, that just means splitting these final four games. So I don't think it's the end of the world if they drop this game.
Yeah, I definitely see them winning at least two of their last four. Specifically those last two. I mean, they're going to beat Dallas. They're going to beat Arizona. The Rams are going to be tough, and Jacksonville's going to be tough this weekend. So should be an awesome matchup between the Jaguars and the Seahawks on Sunday afternoon. Right now it's time for a break, though. When we come back, Shohei Ohtani, the news of the Japanese baseball star, is getting bigger and bigger. And I said I didn't want to fall for it, but I totally have. And when we come back from the break, you'll find out why. So don't go anywhere. It's Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio.
Welcome to my block party. Glad you can make it.
The only triple-doubles you get come with fries.
Last time you blocked someone, you were online.
I can do this all day. Your moves are just gay.
Using gay to mean dumb or stupid, not cool.
Not cool.
Not in my house, not anywhere.
It's not creative, it's offensive to gay people. And you're better than that.
Welcome back to Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Seth Bershing. I'm a half athlete here at PLU. I'm joined in the studio today by a fellow half athlete, Christian Bond.
Yo.
He doesn't play sports anymore, likes to write about them, and of course talk about them on the radio. That's why we're here. No DJ today, but life goes on. We must continue. If you like what you're listening to and want to hear it again, go to massmedia.plu.edu. Again, that's massmedia.plu.edu. Or you can go check us out on YouTube. It's Half Athlete Radio. Again, that's Half Athlete Radio. Go subscribe. You can watch all of our content there, including some of Christian's special Half Athlete Tries video.
They're the best.
They are very entertaining, if
yes.
nothing else.
Yes. Well, that's the point. They should be. I don't know what else they would be. Like, if they're not entertaining, then why would people watch them?
if you want to call the show, the number to do that is 253-535-7332. That's 253-535-7332.
Let's jump into it. Last week, we talked about the possibility of Japanese superstar Shohei Ohtani joining the Seattle Mariners. Ohtani is an unbelievable talent. He can pitch. He's a right-handed pitcher. He throws... I believe his fastball sits, quote-unquote, sits at 93 to 102 miles an hour. I don't know how that sits at all. I mean, that thing is moving.
Yeah.
And at the plate, he's a left-handed hitter, and he can just destroy baseballs. I mean, His highlight tapes are unreal. Every single team in baseball is salivating over the opportunity to add this guy to their club. And on Sunday, Ohtani narrowed it down from 30 teams to just 7 teams. And it was reported that our Seattle Mariners are the leaders in the clubhouse. They have one of the best chance, if not the best chance, to land Shohei Ohtani. When I did a little more research about Ohtani, it became kind of almost baffling why he's choosing to come to the major leagues right now. He's 23 years old, super young. If Ohtani were to wait 2 more seasons, he would be eligible for a, you know, unlimited money. He could make whatever any other free agent in MLB would make. Because he's doing this at 23, he would have to sign a minor league contract. That puts Ohtani under club control for the next 6 years, making the league minimum for 3 of those seasons. And his signing bonus, I mean, the Mariners have $1.55 million of international money to spend, whereas the Rangers, another team in that top 7, have $3.53 million. So his signing bonus right now, at the most, from what it sounds like, could be $3.53 million. I mean, yeah. Money's not a deal for this guy. I mean, it's almost...
Clearly not.
It's literally almost too good to be true, and that's why I've tried to be so hesitant on this. But, you know, rumors are swirling that he's going to sign either today or tomorrow with somebody. Could you believe if it was the Mariners? Like, this is unreal.
Yeah, it's... I don't want to get too excited in case it doesn't happen, especially if you were to go to one of the Mariners division rivals like the Angels or the Rangers, who are also in that final 7. But I mean, just the possibility of bringing in a superstar, a two-way superstar player, you can really plug him in anywhere in your lineup, anywhere in your rotation, even in the bullpen if you really wanted to. There's just so much flexibility that comes with it. And as you said, with the financial situation being the way it is, the Mariners are currently 13th in payroll. That's not really going to be affected all that much by Ohtani's contract.
No, it's not. And I mean, really, with a look at Ohtani as that guy who can do both, he can pitch and he can hit. It's almost like looking into the future of baseball. If the rosters aren't going to expand, I mean, right now teams are only allowed 25 people on the team at a time. And, you know, that gives you, what, 4 bench players and, like, 7 bullpen guys and 5 star. I mean,
yeah,
you don't have a lot of options. So for a player to only be able to do one thing, for a player to only be a starting pitcher, like, that, the days of that are going to end so soon. And with Ohtani, I think it's almost the start of that. Like, okay, everyone does everything now. You're all just baseball players. We'll figure it out from here. It's wild.
The game's definitely changing. It's still, of course, very rare to have a hybrid player like Ohtani. And even the hybrids that you do have aren't as good as Ohtani is at both things. They're either mostly a pitcher, mostly a hitter. You don't see players who do both of these things this well.
You mentioned that the Angels and the Rangers, obviously American League West division rivals for the Mariners, they're in on this. National League teams are also in on this, and the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Padres are in the mix for this guy as well. And the furthest east, it's either Texas or Chicago Cubs. Those are the other two teams he had, or that's the 7th team, the Chicago Cubs. I mean, I just can't. I wasn't going to get into it, but like, now I'm all in. Now I want this guy here in the worst way, because it's a legitimate possibility. It's not just, oh, the Mariners could land him. It's like, they're 1 of 7, and a lot of people are saying they check all his boxes. They check everything he wants. He could be the man right now. I mean, I'm at a loss. I don't even know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking at last season's numbers for the Mariners as a whole, they were 15th in runs per game. They were 18th in ERA by their starters, 13th in ERA by their relievers. So, I mean, they were just middle of the pack in everything, and adding Ohtani would change that outlook significantly without even having to make any other moves.
I think it would stabilize something more than anything, if that makes sense. I mean, it would, you know, he'd be a... You would hope at 23 years old that he's not an injury guy.
Yeah.
It would be a shame to figure that out, you know. But it's also so low risk because we talked about the money situation. Like, it's not that big of a deal to spend the money. Like, to spend the money it's going to take to sign this guy, which is not a ton, it's not a big deal to get what you're going to get in return.
Yeah.
Wild. Wild, wild, wild. I don't know, man. I hope he signs today. I hope he signs with the Mariners. Or I hope he signs somewhere else so we can kind of, like, move on from it, too.
Right. Because it's kind of keep us in suspense.
It's kind of put the entire offseason on hold. Like, yeah, DePoto's made a couple of moves to add Ryan Healy and guys like that, but I mean, for the most part, everything's been stopped, waiting on this Ohtani news, and then after that, we'll figure it all out. So, I don't know, man. It's exciting.
Should be fun. See how it plays out.
All right, we are going to go ahead and get on out of here. It has been such a fun show. It's just been Seth and I, and I think it went very well. So, we want to thank you very much for tuning in. Tune into other sports talk shows on Laser. Tune into Laser all the time, but specifically the sports talk shows on Friday at 10:30 a.m. Tune into H&C Sports. They'll get you ready for the football weekend. They're excited about their show. They, you know, if you thought our college football talk was interesting, you got to wait till you hear theirs. They were fired up on Monday, ready for their show on Friday. So you can only imagine how that show is going to go on Friday morning at 10:30 right here on Laser. And then on Tuesday nights, right before you go to bed, tune in at 9 p.m. to What's the Big Deal with Dylan Foreman, Sarah Cornell-Meyer, and Zach Goff. They had a great show throughout this fall semester, and we'll see if they're doing another show coming up soon. But for right now, Half Athlete Radio is almost done. For Seth Bershing, my name is Christian Bond. We're out of here. See ya.